Good afternoon. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon for Parsha Perspectives on Parshas Va'era. I want to speak about two different ideas about one pasuk. We'll present one idea, then the second half will present a different idea. If you had the opportunity to speak with Hitler, Yimach Shemo, you had the opportunity, you got a meeting with him as he's figuring out what he wants to do with the final solution. You got a meeting with him and you want to have the opportunity to say something to him. Would you speak to him with respect or do you speak to him with disdain? That's the question I ask you. In Parsha Shmos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs Moshe v'Aaron. The pasuk says, Vayitzavim, Hashem commands them, El Paro Melech Mitzrayim. It doesn't say Hashem said, speak to Paro Melech Mitzrayim. It doesn't say that Hashem says to Moshe and Aaron, ask Paro Melech Mitzrayim lehotzias b'nei Yisrael, to release b'nei Yisrael from Mitzrayim. It says that Hashem commands them to Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Very unusual form. And Rashi says, what does it mean that Hashem commands them regarding Paro? Tziva alav lachlok lo kavod b'divrayim. Hashem is commanding Moshe to speak to Aaron to speak with Paro with dignity, with respect, with reverence. Why in the world should that be? Asks the Chasam Sofer. We're dealing with a madman, Paro, this madman who's killed 13 Jewish babies every morning to have a bloodbath, literally, to bathe in their blood. This is the person who wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael, who wanted to kill every Jewish boy and throw that into the Ya'or. And here, as Hashem is saying, go speak to Paro to release B'nai Yisrael, you should speak to him with respect, with reverence, with dignity, with kavod. Maybe you'll say, you know, if you speak with disrespect, he's not going to listen to you. That doesn't make sense. Hashem doesn't need Paro's good graces in order to get B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Hashem could do whatever he wants. Paro's just a pawn, a puppet in Hashem's hands. Hashem just wants Paro to be around so that Hashem could show his glory and teach Paro and Mitzrayim the lessons that Hashem wants to teach about the koach of Hashem. Why is it that Hashem instructs Moshe Rabbeinu to speak to Paro with kavod, with reverence? I want to share with you a thought I heard from Elimelech Biderman. The Chofetz Chaim, every Friday afternoon, would walk around the city of Radin, the town of Radin, and he would try to convince the storekeepers in the town, the non-religious storekeepers, to keep Shabbos, to close their stores for Shabbos. And every Friday afternoon, he would take one of the boys from his yeshiva with him on the rounds around Radin to speak to the storekeepers. One fine Friday, he took a young man named Avraham Kalmanovitz. Avraham Kalmanovitz, years later, became the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva in Brooklyn. But he was still a young man at the time in Europe, in Radin. And he accompanied the Chofetz Chaim in the circuit around the town of Radin. They went to a number of stores, and there was a certain storekeeper that as they came in and said, would you mind, maybe you know, Shabbos and you're Jewish, maybe you should consider shuttering your doors. The storekeeper screamed at them and lashed out at them and swung at them and cursed them out and said the most terrible and terrifying things and struck Avraham Kalmanovitz to the core. I guess Chofetz Chaim had been there before. And that was the Friday, that was the trip on Friday afternoon. A few weeks later, totally unconnected to this, a young man comes crying in the middle of the night to the Chofetz Chaim, middle of the night, late at night, and he's crying, he's saying, my wife is dying at birth. Why is, you know, please give me a bracha that my wife should live. So the Chofetz Chaim says, well, we know there's a chazal teaches, there are three mitzvahs that a woman has, maybe she's not being careful with the mitzvahs that are gifted to a woman. And the man says, no, she's careful with all the mitzvahs. Maybe tzedaka tatzami mamas, maybe you have to give tzedaka. And the man cries, no, we gave a very large amount of tzedakah, but the doctors are saying that she's bleeding heavily and that we should bring the Chevra Kaddish, we should bring a minion for the Yitzias Neshama. I just need to have tacha from the Chofetz Chaim that she should live. Chofetz Chaim replies to him, do you know this boy, Avraham Kalmanovitz? Please go get for me that boy. Get that boy for me, Avraham Kalmanovitz. So they go, he runs to get Avraham Kalmanovitz, either from the Beis Medrash or from his bed, wherever he might have been at the time. Avraham Kalmanovitz comes rushing in. And the Chofetz Chaim looks at him and says, Avram, are you prepared? You remember that trip we had that Friday afternoon a few weeks ago? And you got those bizionos, those terribly embarrassing curses from that storekeeper? Are you ready to to give up those zechuyos from your embarrassment to save this fellow's wife in her birth, in giving birth? So Aaron Kalmanovitz doesn't really have much of a choice, and the Chofetz Chaim is asking, do you want to give up this zechus to save, you know, somebody's life? So he says, yes, of course, I'm willing to give up the zechuyos I got from all those bizyonos that I suffered that Friday afternoon for the zechus of this woman to live. Apparently, the story has it that half an hour later, this woman was fine. A few weeks after this, Avram Kalmanovitz again approaches his Rebbe, the Chofetz Chaim, and says, Rebbe, I have two questions for you. Why did you want me to give my zechuyos? You were also there. You got the same embarrassment. You got the same curses. You got the same swinging of whatever he swung at us. Why did you want me, my zechuyos? What about you? What about yours? And secondly, Rebbe, if indeed those bizyonos that I suffered were so valuable, maybe I should have kept them for myself. Maybe I shouldn't have given them over to save that young woman. Chofetz Chaim told him, yeah, good questions. I'll answer both of your questions. Your first question, why I wanted your zechuyos, not mine. You see, I'm old. I'm an old man. I'm thinking about other things. These kinds of things, what people say about me, doesn't bother me so much. You're a young fellow. You're worried about what other people think of you. You're a teenager. You care what other people think. You probably couldn't sleep for 3 days after hearing these curses and these words hurled at you. And your second question, that maybe you should have kept it, you know what? That's a good point. The zechuyos that you had of suffering the bizyonos in the hands of this fellow were great zechuyos for you. Maybe you should have kept it, but you know what? What's the value of a zechus if not to help a fellow Jew? This story is remarkably echoes a Gemara in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi tells us about Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar was a machnes orech. He was a big machnes orech. He was a parnas. He hosted a lot of guests. And one day he comes back from wherever he was, and he knows he hears some commotion, some noise in the dining room, and he asks his family, "Knew what's happened in the dining room?" They say, "We have a bunch of guests." He said, "Oh, what's up with these guests? What's the deal with these guests?" He said, "They are so gracious. They're so appreciative. They're thanking us and they're giving us brachas. And they're wonderful guests." And Rabbi Elazar says, "What a shame. What a shame." And then another time, he again comes home and he hears, noise in the dining room. And he says to the family, people in his house, "Oh, what's up with the, I hear we have guests." And they say, "Yes, these are the most miserable, wretched guests. They're so ungrateful. They're kfuye tova. They're ingrates. They're just cursing us out. We did so much for them. We gave them lodging. We gave them a delicious meal. And they're just not appreciative for anything that we're doing." And Rabbi Elazar says, "Baruch Hashem, this is wonderful." What is the Yerushalmi teaching us? The Yerushalmi is teaching us that when a person suffers bizyonos, when a person suffers being embarrassed in the eyes of others and being called names, that gives a person incredible zechuyos. And with this idea, says the Chasam Sofer, we can answer our question. You want to know why Hashem says, "I want you to speak to Paro, this terrible, miserable wretch of a Paro, with respect and reverence?" Says the Chasam Sofer, because if you would have spoken to him the way he deserves to be spoken, with bizyonos and disdain and condescension, that experience would have given Paro kaparas avonos, would have cleansed Paro, and Paro would not be zocha, would not be worthy to get the 10 makos that Hashem wants to send his way, that Hashem wants to teach Paro with and to teach the people of Mitzrayim with. And that, says the Chasam Sofer, is the reason why Rashi teaches us, why the Pasuk teaches us, that Hashem wants Aaron and Moshe to speak with respect so that he could keep his, whatever zechuyos, I don't know what zechuyos, but he shouldn't have that cleansing experience that's been zionos and that embarrassment offers a person, so that Paro will still be worthy to get those makos. He shouldn't have the zechuyos of experiencing these bizyonos. I saw in a beautiful sefer, Moshe Cordovero, the Tomer Dvorah of Moshe Cordovero, explains that a person could be cleansed by experiencing various types of yisurin, of pain, of challenge. And Moshe Cordovero writes that the best yisurin, the best type of challenge and pain a person could ever experience is bizyonos, is being embarrassed. And he says why. He says because sometimes if a person has financial problems, it's difficult. They don't have the money to do what they have to do. They're not able to do their Torah and mitzvahs because they're so preoccupied with trying to put together, rub together two nickels. Person, God forbid, experiences a medical challenge. So they can't serve Hashem, they can't learn, they can't daven, they can't do mitzvahs, they can't do chesed. They don't feel good. They're not able to get around, they're not able to get out. I was speaking to a friend of mine, somebody who's a very big Talmud Chacham, who gives shiurim, somebody who wrote Svarim, and he's, you know, he was sick a few weeks ago, and he said, I was so wiped out, I had to just, all day long, there's a person who learns hours a day, and gives shiurim, he said, I was able to learn a few Mishnayos a day, just to fulfill the mitzvah of learning Torah every day. I had no energy. That's what the Talmud Devar says. If a person has a medical problem, sometimes it's terrible. They can't do mitzvahs. Besides that, whatever experience, it also takes away from their service of Hashem. But, says the Talmud Devar, when a person experiences the suffering of bizyonos, of being embarrassed, bizyonos bother a person only as much as the person lets him or herself be bothered. And that, says the Talmud Devar, is why a person should rejoice if a person is, if you experience bizyonos, somebody calls you a name, somebody makes fun of you, somebody pokes fun of you, we should rejoice at that opportunity of getting that cleansing, if we could have that strength to not be bothered and not be pulled down by those comments. It's not easy, but it's, if a person could do that, it's a wonderful gift, and that of cleansing through the bizyonos. There's a very cute Hasidicism, if I could coin that term, for the Kloisenberger Rebbe. You know, there's a custom that many people have that when you take the Dalad Minim after Sukkot is over, you burn the Dalad Minim, you wait till Erev Sukkot, Erev Pesach, I'm sorry, 6 months later, and you use the Lulav, you use the Hadassim, and you put them in a fire in the Sreifas Chametz when you burn the Chametz in Erev Pesach. You know, you did one mitzvah, you should use it for another mitzvah. So sometimes, you know, in my house, we have the Lulavim sitting in our garage. I always forget, Erev Pesach, it's so busy, I forget to bring it with me to the Sreifas Chametz at the train station. But so we have it sitting in my garage, and I'm sure many of you in your basements, you might have a Lulav sitting around from years past that you're waiting to, you know, throw into the Chametz. But there's a custom, if you've ever been in shul on Hoshana Rabbah, that right after the Hoshanas are clapped, you know what they do? They throw it in shtiblach around the world. You see in shtiblach, you know, bigger shul, sometimes the janitors clean it up. But in shtiblach, you still see this. They take the Hoshanas, they throw it on top of the Aron Kodesh. And the Kloisenberger Rebbe asked a very simple question. Why is it the lulav, which represents, you know, every one of the mina represent, you know, somebody with Torah, with mitzvahs, Torah and mitzvahs. Esrog has some, represents someone with Torah and mitzvahs, has tam v'reach. And the lulav, which is a date tree, has a tam, but no reach. And hadassim have reach, but no tam. They represent Jews with Torah, with mitzvahs. How come the dalad mina that represent the higher level Jews, the Jews with Torah, with mitzvahs, those you throw in a fire, but the hoshanas, which represent the lowest level Jew, somebody who doesn't have Torah, so who doesn't have mitzvahs, the arava, him you put on top of the Aron Kodesh? Answers the Kloisenberger Rebbe, because the Hoshanas got clapped. A person could be very small, doesn't have Torah, doesn't have mitzvahs, but if they get clapped, they're cleansed. They deserve to be put right on top of the Aron Kodesh. Just a beautiful, beautiful Hasidicism from the Kloisenberger Rebbe. That's one thought that I wanted to share with you of the power, the cleansing power, the opportunity of experiencing embarrassment and taking it in the right sense. As Chovas HaLevavos writes, when somebody embarrasses you, you shouldn't be angry at the person. You should realize that Hashem is giving you, sending this to you, and say thank you to the person who embarrasses you, so it could cleanse you, but at the same time, it doesn't take away anything from your life, from your health, from your wealth, from whatever you have, because it's only going to hurt you as much as you allow it to hurt you. And if you make it not hurt you, then bizyonos don't hurt. That's the first half of today's shir. The second half of today's shir is a different topic that doesn't talk about how we receive things, how we receive the comments that other people make about us. But now I'd like to speak about the comments that we make to other people in our neighborhood, to other people in our family. And I think it will provide an incredible lesson of how we're supposed to speak to people. The same pasuk that the first half of today's shiur was about. The pasuk says that Hashem tells Moshe and Aaron, go to Paro, Vaitzavim el Bnei Yisrael. Hashem says, I command you to go, Vaitzavim, Hashem commands them to Paro, to go to Paro Melech Mitzrayim, Lohotzi es Bnei Yisrael Me'aretz Mitzrayim. Now, if you look a few psukim before that pasuk, where Hashem says, go tell Paro, I want to let Bnei Yisrael out, go tell Bnei Yisrael and Paro, it's time for the Jews to leave. If you turn back a few psukim, you'll notice something interesting. Moshe and Aaron, in the beginning of the parsha, already went to Bnei Yisrael. And they tried to tell Bnei Yisrael, guys, guess what? Our time is here. The Geula is imminent. I've come to save you, in Hashem's words. V'lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach me'avodah kasha. The Jewish people were not interested in listening to the good news. They were too stressed out. They were too tired. They were too overwhelmed. They were too feeling persecuted, feeling oppressed. They didn't have the energy to be excited about the fact, the good news, that Hashem is ready to redeem them. And then, right after we hear that, the next pasuk, Hashem says, "Vayitzavim al Bnei Yisrael, go to Bnei Yisrael and to Paro, lehotzi es Bnei Yisrael me'aretz Mitzrayim, to redeem Klal Yisrael." Wait a second. Why did it say "Vayitzavim el Bnei Yisrael ve'el Paro"? Didn't Moshe and Aaron already go to Bnei Yisrael? Didn't we already do that? Didn't we already try that and it didn't work? So why are you going again to Bnei Yisrael and to Paro to free the Jewish people? That's the first question. Second question is, right after this pasuk, when Hashem sends Moshe and Aaron to go to Bnei Yisrael and Paro to redeem Klal Yisrael, right after it, the Torah, instead of launching into the meeting with Paro and the conversation with Hashem, told us, sent us to free the Jewish people, the Torah opens up a parenthesis and tell us who are Bnei Yisrael. Eile Rashei Beis Avosam. And the Torah goes on to list the families of Bnei Yisrael. And it says, this is the family of Reuven, and it lists all the family, all the heads of the family in Reuven. And Shimon, and this is the list of all the people of the families of Shimon. And Levi, it lists the family, the heads of the families of Levi. And it stops there. The other nine Shvatim are not specified, or not even mentioned who they are, who their families are. So, first of all, why is this family lineage being interrupted in the middle of this mission to go for Moshe Aaron to go redeem Klal Yisrael? And secondly, why are only Reuven, Shimon, and Levi specified as far as their family tree? What about the other nine Shvatim? Rashi is bothered by this anomaly, and Rashi says that since we're talking about Moshe and Aaron, we want to know who these people are, so we want to get to what their ancestry is. So the Torah tells us, you know, who Moshe and Aaron, they're from the tribe of Levi, but Torah didn't want to just start with Levi and Moshe and Aaron, so start with Reuven and Shimon, and then got to Levi, and now we understand the context of who Moshe and Aaron are, who their family is, and now we could get and talk about the story about Moshe and Aaron. That's what Rashi says. Okay, between you and me, it's not so satisfying. You know, we're giving the family tree of Reuven, Shimon, and Levi just because we want to get to Levi and Moshe and Aaron, so if you want to tell us who Moshe and Aaron are, then tell us who Moshe and Aaron's family was. Why do you have to start with Reuven and all of their children, and Shimon and all of his, you know, heads of family? I'd like to share with you a beautiful Meshech Chachma, a very unusual Meshech Chachma. And he has a very different way of reading these psukim in a way that will answer this question, why the Torah specifies the families of Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and no one else. And also the first question that we asked of why does Hashem command Moshe and Aaron to approach Bnei Yisrael a second time to free the slaves? Not just to approach Paro to free the slaves, but also to approach Bnei Yisrael to free the slaves. And this is what the Meshech Chachma says. The Meshech Chachma says that Moshe and Aaron did not only approach Paro to free Bnei Yisrael, Moshe and Aaron also approached the upper class Jews who themselves owned Jewish slaves. Who are those upper-class Jews who are not enslaved but owned slaves? The three Shvatim, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. We know that Levi, Chazal say also, Levi was not in the Shibud. But suggests the Meshech Chachma that Reuven and Shimon and Levi, all three of those Shvatim, were upper-class slave owners. They had the means, they were wealthy, they had the means to buy their other Jewish brothers from the Mitzrayim, right? The Mitzrayim enslaved Klal Yisrael, and these three Shvatim had the means to buy their Jewish brothers from the Mitzrayim. And therefore, we understand, why did Hashem send Moshe and Aaron to Bnei Yisrael and to Paro to redeem Klal Yisrael? And why did Hashem send Moshe and Aaron a second time to Bnei Yisrael? The first time he came to tell Bnei Yisrael, guys, it's time, we're going free. V'lo shamu al Moshe. They weren't interested. But now that Moshe and Aaron are really going to do the thing to free Bnei Yisrael, they have to approach Paro, of course, but also Reuven and Shimon and Levi, along with Paro, free Bnei Yisrael. The Jewish brother, the Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, you free your Jewish brothers, and Paro, you free the rest of the Jews. What's the common denominator about Reuven and Shimon and Levi? Why were they the slave owners and not the slaves themselves? And here the Meshech Chachma says something frightening but incredible. Let's flash back a few decades ago. Yaakov was dying, and he gathered his 12 sons all around his bed for brachos. At the end of Parshas Vayechi. And he gave the 12 Shvatim brachos. Except the first three brachos that he gave, the first three Shvatim to whom he gave brachos, they weren't really brachos. They were actually words of criticism, words of rebuke, speaking down to them. Says the Meshech Chachma, listen to this incredible idea. When Yaakov Avinu gave those words of criticism to Reuven and to Shimon and to Levi, he broke them. They lost their self-confidence. And because of that, says the Meshech Chachma, if these three Shvatim, who didn't have that same self-confidence as the other brothers who had received brachos from Yaakov Avinu, if these three Shvatim would have been enslaved like the rest of Klal Yisrael, because they lacked self-confidence, they would not have had the fortitude to withstand the nisyonos of being a slave of Mitzrayim. They would have given up if they would have been slaves of Mitzrayim. Maybe they would even have assimilated into the Egyptian culture. And therefore suggested Meshech Chachma, Hashkacha saw to it that these three Shvatim should not be enslaved at all to save them from such a terrible descent, to give up and to assimilate. We see an incredible idea here in this Meshech Chachma, that when a person speaks to somebody else, a Jew speaks to another Jew, you speak to your children, you speak to your family, you have the power to give somebody self-confidence or to break somebody's self-confidence. A parent bolsters a child's self-confidence. If a child is confident, they can withstand temptation, they can withstand pressure, they could deal with adversity. On the other hand, as the Meshech Chachma suggests, if like Reuven and Shimon and Levi who were criticized, even though they deserved it. Reuven, Shimon, Levi deserved their criticism. But because of that, they lacked, says the Meshech Chachma, the emotional fortitude to withstand the challenges that they faced. So when we think about how we speak to people around us, family members, children, whoever we speak to, whether we speak to them with words of criticism or with words of compliment, with words that are constructive, with words that are destructive, we have to realize the power of our words. The power of our words could build, our words could give somebody the self-confidence to withstand an incredible amount of challenge, or our words could destroy and make people weaker and make people have the ability, the possibility to fall to that temptation, to be unable to deal with adversity. Hopefully Hashem should give us the strength, first, like we spoke about in the first half of this year, to whenever we hear something from other people, to always take it in a way that doesn't let it dig into our minds and our psyches. Let us not be hurt by the bizyonos we might face and the embarrassments we might come across. But when we talk to other people, we have to be so careful never to embarrass another person, never to criticize. Be so careful when we criticize, always to bolster people, to build their self-confidence, and never the opposite, never to break a person. I want to thank you all for joining.